I think you just add that music. That's good.
Welcome back to the TV Talk Machine. It's episode number 42. Very important for nerds out there. That's an important number. I am Jason Snell. I'm one of the people who knows what that number is. So across the internet from me, it's your host, TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter, Mr. Tim Goodman. Hi,
oh,
Tim.
You don't think I know what the meaning of life is? Is that what you're saying?
The universe?
Uh-huh.
Everything?
Yeah.
Do you have your towel with you?
I do not.
Oh, you should always know where your towel is. Do you know where it is?
No.
Oh. Well, you know your exits, doors and corners. You should
that
always know.
I do know.
All the right.
Doors, yeah, exits. I'm always covered on that.
So I was gone last week, and thank you to David Lohr for filling in. I actually was just listening to that podcast episode today because I wanted to get caught up. I didn't want to. I've been catching up on all my podcasts, but I wanted to make sure that you know what terrible things you guys said about me last week.
a little bit in there about you.
Nerve of me going on a vacation for a couple of days. I know it's insane.
As I figured out that you had created your replacement, and yet I had no replacement.
Yeah, well, so the if it's possible that we could do a TV Talk Machine without you, but I think the point is you're not replaceable, and I am replaceable, so you could think of it that way. And the truth is that when you've been unavailable, what we've done is we've done those back, you know, we record a couple episodes shorter back to back, and then just sort of play them out over time. So it seems as if you're here every week when, you know, you can go away to Banff and Austin and places like that, and no one even knows.
I know. How crazy is that?
It's magic.
It's magic.
It's podcast magic.
International simultaneous release.
So what was funny about my trip to, yes, we are releasing this simultaneously worldwide in all markets.
Worldwide.
Mm-hmm. All markets are served by the TV Talk Machine. I was in San Diego last week. And
yes.
What was great about it is that for the last few years, I've gone to Comic-Con, I think, 3 out of the last 5 years. And I decided last year that I wasn't going to come back this year because I was mostly there for computery things, like it was the iPad sort of encroaching into the comics world and all that. And I thought that was interesting, but it's now just part of life. So I didn't have a driving need to go. And it's just so San Diego is so beautiful. And yet this time of year, but when you're in crowds and, you know, and then you're trekking somewhere to some lousy hotel and your family is, you know, up the road a couple of hours, you're like, you know, I was prone to sort of these fantasies of, you know, what would be really nice is if all these people weren't here. I should come here sometime when there isn't Comic-Con and bring my wife and we could walk around and instead of me being kind of a lonely person surrounded by thousands and thousands of Comic-Con people. And so
other
I did that. That's what we did last week. So I had my not Comic-Con. It was great. We were right by the convention center in one of the hotels right next to the convention center. I was pointing out to my wife, like, that's where the line for the Hall H is. It's right there. People are going to be camping out overnight there to listen to, you know, somebody from Marvel Comics talk for 40 minutes, you know, the next day. And they're going to sleep there all night. And we would just walk around. And there was freedom. And there weren't, like, loads of people. And it was great. But it did mean that I had to miss the TV Talk Machine. Now, you also are doing not Comic-Con.
Yes.
It's during Comic-Con, because you don't want to hear about it.
It's my many, 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 many consecutive years in a row of non-Comic-Con.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Never gone. Never want to go.
Nope.
Never want to ever cover it.
I don't recommend going to it. Or really to anyone.
Yeah.
It's
you
too
know,
big.
The people
too
like
much.
You who did not go this year, I've noticed, and people that I follow on Twitter, how joyful they are.
Mm-hmm.
They're tweeting things about pleasantries and what they're doing other than standing in a line.
Yeah.
And
let's be clear. I would rather go to Comic-Con than the Consumer Electronics Show.
Okay.
For two reasons. One, San Diego is a pleasant place and Las Vegas is just a hell pit.
Hellhole. Yeah.
Two, at least there are things I'd say there are things I love at Comic-Con, and at CES, it's more just, you know, there's not a lot of love there. The tech products that are there are not that exciting to me. That's not my kind of tech product anyway. So I will say that about it. But still, I think it's smart. It's so big now that it's kind of unwieldy. I did notice, though, you were saying that before we started, that the TV critics, Death March with Cocktails this year, it's not for another like 2.5 weeks.
Yeah.
And I find that intriguing because for a while there, it seemed like everybody's game plan was we're going to bring the stars and producers and stuff in, and they're going to go to Comic-Con, and then we're going to drive them up to L.A., and they're going to go to the Death March, and we're going to pack it all in. And this year, they can't play that trick. They can't do it because the Death March isn't for 2.5 weeks.
Right. And, you know, there's been some funny stuff through the years about Comic-Con. We have, for a long time, we were in front of it. And then sometimes we were behind it. And then...
Well, it used to be in August more than July, and it slid backward in time.
Yeah, it did. And then, you mean Comic-Con?
Comic-Con.
Yeah, and I think that the part of that was, you know, it was a lot of stuff that was competing with the TV critics. They're totally different animals. I mean, I do not say this derisively, but Comic-Con is a fanboy event, basically. And while press covers it, it's not for them.
No,
cater to them.
It's a marketing event. It's about launching products for the world, not showing them to critics.
Right.
But I feel like maybe somebody, and I'm not sure whether it was Comic-Con or whether it was the TV Critics Association or whether it was the studios. There's maybe it was just luck, or maybe there was actually some like conspiracy going on there. But it felt like it was sort of like, here's what we're going to do. We're going to fly everybody in from England, and they're going to go to Comic-Con, and then we're going to put them in a van, and we're going to take them to the critics, and then they can get out of town. And they can't [S2] Right. [S1] Get away with that this time. If you want your, you know, I'm going to predict that you're not going to see the people from Doctor Who at the TCA because they're in San Diego right now. And I just don't think they're going to fly them back out three weeks from now again. But we'll see. But
that's
not,
probably a good point. You know? And I don't know how they're going to break it up. I know that for a while we didn't – I think that the TCA as a group didn't care because we do two different things. Then they started to – because there was a longstanding thing where they were not quote-unquote breaking news at Comic-Con. And then Comic-Con became such a gigantic thing and so influential – that they did start breaking news there. They started releasing things.
Definitely.
And, you know, I think that in the business world, that's probably fair. I think it pissed the TCA off. And we said, you know what? Don't bother bringing those ones here then.
Uh-huh.
And then it didn't serve anybody. I think it was painful for people who, because they were not getting the same bump that they were getting with us. I mean, you got a lot of Comic-Con people saying, I love it, I love it, I love it. But you didn't get, at the time, you didn't get 200 plus critics from and writers, TV writers from U.S. and Canada who were writing really big stories for lots of different publications and big places like USA Today and things like that, and then big online outlets. And it was a different kind of thing. I think at some point, and for a while, TCA was kind of, they were not obsessed about it, and then they got obsessed about it. And we wanted to be in front of it so that we broke the news first. We break most of the news anyway, but even just the two or three that we didn't, that was a little more genre specific, that was annoying some people. So we went in front of it, and then it was just chaotic. And then we said, you know what, whatever. It's just, this doesn't. In fact, the networks and the cable people who have so much more to gain from us than they do from, because so much, everything applies to us, whereas mostly genre specific shows apply to Comic-Con. So, the money's better spent or whatever with us. So, and they get a more bang for it, and it's more valuable in a PR sense to be with us. And so I think that what they eventually said to us was, hey, look, you know, you're getting the bulk of the stuff, but we want it to be closer to the start of the TV season. And so that's kind of how we slid back farther in August.
Oh, that's good. Mm-hmm. That's good. I suspect Comic-Con is being pushed the other way because they want to use this as the launch to promote some summer stuff.
Absolutely.
As well as whatever they've got coming on TV in the fall, some summer movies. They can do the Holly movies, they can do the late summer movies, and they can do the TV premieres, even the midsummer TV premieres. So, you know, it maybe we'll keep sliding forward, who knows. But I think uncoupling them is a good thing.
Yeah, and I think the thing that the thing that I don't get to joke about anymore when we uncouple it like this is that it by separating them, it takes away the culture shock of the actors.
Oh, God.
Stars who go there and get all this adoration and then come to us and we come out expecting applause and we just stare at them.
Well, plus the kind of, and I don't mean to insult people by saying this, but the predominant kind of journalism that they're going to be faced with at Comic-Con is going to be people who are writing for fan sites or people who are writing from a very fanish kind of perspective. I watched some videos the other day of some interviews from Comic-Con. It's very much like, you know, how did it feel to be on this thing? And, you know, what's it like being here and things like that. And you guys are coming at it from a completely different perspective. You are coming at it from, you know, a critical perspective of the work. And that's just a very different place. So it's culture shock on all the levels. And they don't really match up at all, I think. So.
Oh, yeah. And there's been a number of times. That's the one thing I probably miss about it. There's been a number of times where the first question someone gets at TCA is, your show finished 115th, was lucky to survive, and got terrible, terrible reviews. What do you think about that?
Yeah.
It's like, oh, welcome to TCA.
Yeah. Comic-Con is over. You
know? Right. It's
officially like, over.
Just because you exist does not mean it's a good thing. So, yeah, I think it's good that they're coupled. I actually – and I understand, just to go back, I understand why people don't want to the slog that is Comic-Con, because, hey, look, TCA is a slog too. I look at that block on my calendar every summer and I think, oh my God, no. You know, because it's like 18 nights.
Yeah.
And it is crazy time.
18 crazy nights with the TV critics.
It's crazy time. And it's all day and it's all night and it's deep into the night. And for me, it's obviously the TV season is 52 weeks a year and I'm having to review shows while I'm there. And it's just no time. And you have to watch all these screeners before you get down there. And of course, my running joke the last few tours has been, you know what? I don't care. I'm going to watch them while I'm here if I can get to them. Because you know what's going to happen? You're going to cancel it before it starts, or you're going to swap out the girlfriend and the mom is going to be younger. And then the brother is going to get fired and the whole thing. I'll have to watch it again. So I don't watch until the very last second.
It's a good call.
Yeah.
You want to talk about some shows?
Let's do that.
So before we do that, I guess it's not quite a show, but it's follow-up from last week. Keith Olbermann, which you guys mentioned briefly, and there was the THR report, which was denied, and then you wrote the piece about where he might go if he leaves ESPN, and it's official that his contract is not going to be renewed, and Keith Olbermann's going to be a free agent again.
Yeah, he's it's really interesting, and it's certainly for kind of a wonky journalist perspective. ESPN was not happy with Marisa Guthrie, our reporter or TV person who broke that story. She's the East Coast TV editor. She broke that story. They said it wasn't true. I wrote a column based on it from that saying, okay, if they're not going to let him do this commentary and he's going to walk, he's perfect fit over at MSNBC. Which, by the way, Variety copied like a week later. Yeah. So incredibly embarrassing for them. But he's out. And a non-disparagement clause in his contract, I would not be surprised if it was in there. He may not be able to talk specifically about why he left. He may not be able to ever – we may never hear him comment whether they were going to take away his right to do commentary or not. In the meantime, it basically comes down to – there was a disagreement about something and he didn't sign. And the one thing that we can point to is that and believe me, it's the one thing that ESPN is pointing to is that he's a New Yorker and he loves living there, and they're filming his stuff, renting a place in Times Square studio to do that, hiring a whole separate crew. And they wanted to move him to Bristol, which anybody who's familiar with Keith Olbermann and ESPN, they know he loathes it in Bristol, and he doesn't want to move back to LA either. So maybe that was the thing. But we'll see. Maybe in the next couple of weeks he'll sign with MSNBC.
Yeah, well, you were pointing out that it's we're coming up into the presidential election cycle too. So having him around, he's going to be somewhere. I think he's not going to be out on the street rattling his cup. And yeah, if he wants to do a podcast, Keith, give me a call. So.
Yeah, he loves talking about.
Yeah. Turn on a microphone
he loves talking about politics. He's gonna get back into it.
Yeah, I think it's clear. You can make the joke about like he's burned all the bridges, so where's it gonna go? But with ESPN, we have seen now that you know, those bridges don't stay burned. he left ESPN, went to all these places, went back to ESPN. You know, maybe he's gonna make a second, a second round through everybody.
He can unburn the bridges.
Yeah, he can. Yes. Exactly right. Mm-hmm. You wrote a review that was we can't call it a review because this is basically a talk show. So you wrote a review of Why with Hannibal Buress, or a first appraisal on Comedy Central, and weren't particularly positive about it. Do you want to just give a brief? I had never even heard of this show, so give me a little brief overview of that.
Well, why with Hannibal Buress is funny that you say you haven't heard about that, because I was telling my boss that there was really not a lot of buzz about this show, and they were like, oh no, people are talking about it. Well, I don't know who was, because I was like, really? You know, Hannibal Buress is a very funny comic, and he has a recurring role in Broad City as Lincoln. He's great in that. He's also on the Eric Andre show. He was the stand-up comic who basically reignited the whole Bill Cosby affair by mocking Cosby in a stand-up bit, and that got more attention put onto the rape stuff. But his show, it's a show that's kind of right now without a purpose. And I think what's interesting about it to me, Jason, is that I think it's indicative of decisions that are being made at Comedy Central for its nighttime programming that might end up being a little dubious. I mean, I still think the Jon Stewart stuff after he leaves is really going to be under the microscope. I don't know if it's going to work. The Hannibal Buress show, they wanted to get something on about him. He came up with an idea and they said, that's not what we want to do. Let's not do that idea. But I don't think they came up with a good replacement idea, because I don't see a meaning and a purpose for this show. And the first week's episode was, they didn't show it to us in advance because they said, oh, he wants to, Last Week Tonight with John Oliver, he needs to absorb the week and then talk about it. Well, during the week, there was obviously the unsealing the 2005 Cosby documents. The court unsealed them and basically showed that he was procuring
quaaludes, right?
Yeah, quaaludes for sex, and on his rapey rampage. And so that would have been a great thing for Hannibal Buress to talk about, and he didn't. So there really was no reason at all for them to wait so long before they did it. And they should have done a trial episode, because the first episode was frankly not very good. And in fact, the last 5 minutes of it, there was an on-set skit that he did that didn't make no sense and was definitely not funny. And I thought, oh my God, this whole thing needed to be edited. But again, it's the first show, and you know my theory about that. I don't review shows the first time. I'll revisit it later when they're up and running. But it was an inauspicious debut. Let's put it that way.
All right. A lot of shows coming and coming back, including, ooh, I know one of your favorites, Rectify.
Yes. Rectify started.
You and David talked about it last week.
Yeah. And that started Thursday. I actually tweeted out some interview, like 45 minutes. I can do it again. We'll put it in the show notes. But there was a 45-minute video on YouTube of me interviewing the cast in Austin at the ATX Festival. And it's good to actually have seen the first episode before you see that one. But it was great. I mean, and not only that, Wednesday night, the night before it premiered, it was renewed for a fourth season. I think that was very surprising, especially if you watched the video, because no one really knows if at the time, if they didn't know if they would get a fourth season. They were hoping for it, but they didn't know not that they would be renewed by Sundance, but whether Rand McKinnon, who created it, even wanted to write it anymore. Huh. So, both things happened. It's a great first episode. It's a wonderful show, and a lot of people are now coming back to it because it's really one of the big heavyweights of the dramas that are still on the air.
Great. Masters of Sex is coming back on Showtime, right? Is that this weekend?
That is this Sunday, and I will. We might not have a thing in the show notes for it because it won't be done yet, but I will be reviewing that on Sunday. I'll post it on day of. And yeah, you know, it's improved. I will put it this way. I'm looking forward to the third season in a way that I was not looking to or didn't like enduring, let's say, the second season. I loved the first season. Second season felt like it was lost. It didn't know where it was going. There was a number of reasons for that, but I think that they kind of stumbled last year, and it was disconnected and disjointed. And I think they're back on track. It's a time jump to a better period when their report, the Masters and Johnson's report, came out, and they became more like sexual rock gods about the world of sexuality. And I think that that's a better time for the show to take place. And I'm looking forward to that one for sure.
All right, that's good news. It's back on track.
Yeah.
What about Ray Donovan?
Ray Donovan, you know, I was one of the early adopters on Ray Donovan. I think if you go back, I was probably one of the, I was like the first critic who was super excited about it. And it was got kind of good, but not great reviews in the first season. And I still like the show. I don't feel like it's something that I'm going to watch regularly. So I'm not even reviewing it. Mm. So it's just one of those ones.
It's out there. Yeah. It's the third season now. Wow.
It's the third season. Yeah. It's not holding me as much. I will say the acting performances are great, but there you go.
Okay. All right. And I think right before, in the next week, sort of toward the middle of next week, is when the new Dennis Leary show is coming out, right?
Yes. Now that one I'm super excited about. That's going to be Thursday, July 16th. So right before episode 43. And also Married comes back that same day, people who like Married. But Sex and Drugs and Rock and Roll is a new series from Dennis Leary. I just reviewed it today. It won't be online for a little bit, probably in the early next week. But it's a perfect show for him. It's it can't really be more perfect. I wrote in my review that like this kind of show, it seems so simple that someone should have done it and done it like this particularly before now. But that's the great thing about premises, right? When Mad Men came out, people were like, oh, haven't seen this idea before. Somebody should have done this. But Sex and Drugs and Rock and Roll is Dennis Leary as a sort of aging rock star, head of this quote legendary band that never got famous. They got good reviews. They broke up on the day of their big album that came out because as his character blows every band up that he's in. So he's more of a legend for his lifestyle than he is for his music. Mm. But it's really good in that here's this band. They're all in their, they're all older now. And John Corbett plays the guitarist, who is the most estranged person from the band. And everybody in the band is basically struggling and they're just kind of barely getting by. But the John Corbett lead guitarist character has gone on to play guitar for Lady Gaga, which is just one of the funny elements of the show, where you can sort of talk about current bands and former bands and all these jokes come out. And but the hook is that Dennis Leary finds out he has a 22-year-old daughter that he didn't know about. And she's back and she's got some of her mom's money. And she's basically, her idea is like, I'm going to pay you to get the band back together. I'm going to sing a couple of your best songs from the album that came out. But you guys, you and the guitarist, are going to write songs because you were great together and now you're estranged. You're going to write songs together for me, and then I'm going to become a rock star. And that's basically how it is. And it turns out that the actress and the character both have great voices. And so there is something there. Like, she is the progeny, has a lot of talent, and she sings these old songs and brings them to life, and they start writing new songs for her. So you have this generational thing about music, which is good. But for me, the part that really connects is Dennis Leary is really funny. Everybody who's in the band is very funny. It's kind of a whole send up of rock and roll cliches, but done in a funny way. And interestingly enough, as a comedy that only runs a half an hour, it's very insightful in it's not just joke. It's very insightful about getting older. And it's kind of perfect because in real life, Leary is actually turning, let's see, August, he'll be 58. And so it's like people who sought fame and didn't get it, people who want to stay young and can't, fear of growing up, fear of aging. It's one of the most insightful shows I think I've seen in a long time about aging and what that means, both for men and women, and vanity and youth-obsessed culture. So there's a lot to say inside what would just normally be a send-up of rock and roll. But the funny part about it is if you're into music of any kind, they're all over the map. You know, it's the Foo Fighters and Afghan Whigs and there's jokes like, suck it, Oasis, and stuff like that, where there's all these references. And one of my, there's a John Lennon joke that's particularly cruel, but funny stuff. And, there's a scene where Dennis Leary's character is named Johnny Rock, right? Of course, it's so cliche. And he's just been using and abusing for so long. They need to get him straight so he can write. And he goes, name one band or rock star that doesn't get high. And the band kind of an intervention for him because they're all clean, said, you know, Coldplay, Morrissey, Radiohead. And he's like, yeah, I rest my case. And so there's a lot of spoofing of like current bands and stuff like that. So a lot of good jokes there, references to bands you'll see. Very, very funny stuff. Like he gets sober and he shows them his first like acoustic song that he wrote sober, clean and sober. And when it's finished, they all basically run out to get him drugs because it's terrible. And the daughter says, here's the quote. The daughter says, dad, that sounded like something Sting would. I'm sorry. I was just laughing. The joke is like, dad, that was something that Sting would write, and it came out the inside of Sarah McLachlan's vagina. So there's all kinds of stuff like that. There's all Sting jokes and Sarah McLachlan jokes and Lady Gaga jokes, and it's all over the map. It's a good way of like kind of skewering the past and the present, and it's just a good format for him to talk about. He loves music, obviously. He writes all the songs. Greg Dooley from Afghan Whigs is like the music producer of it. It's good. Strong cast.
Yeah, that sounds good. I was surprised when you said that it was based on the context of what the show's about and of Dennis Leary and Rescue Me, that it's a half-hour show. That surprises me a little bit. It sounded more like, you know, I was kind of expecting this to be like an hour kind of a comedy drama, but it's a half hour comedy.
Yeah, it's a half hour comedy. It's there is some dramatic elements in it. It's I'm curious as to whether FX will let it run, because it's running right now at about 32 minutes, and of course FX has commercials. So I'm wondering if they'll keep that in there or if they'll have to cut something. I think that there's I hope that they don't. I kind of liked everything about it, but it does have that. I mean, it's not as like dramatic as say, you know. Nurse Jackie or something like that, but it does have its dramatic moments, and I think that's when you're seeing that it is a continuing storyline, that this idea that his daughter can actually sing and can actually that she's reinvigorated this band and all these things. There's dramatic arcs to it that are an ongoing storyline, which make it you kind of want to binge it in some ways. You want to go to the next one. Really, I watched five of them in a row and I loved it. And there is, like I said, there is that thing about aging, and I think that everybody from John Corbett to obviously Dennis Leary doesn't have a problem talking about his age and things like that. And I think that there is something about that. Where they're getting to, it's like personal stuff that's revealing. And then the next thing you know, there's a Morrissey joke, right? So it's, there's a little of both going on.
All right. I'll check it out. Sounds good.
Yeah, it's good.
It's time for Jason Reports In About TV Shows. We don't have music for that. Jason Reports. Boo. I watched James Patterson's Zoo. I know David mentioned this because he watched it. I feel like he got me off the hook a little bit, but I did watch it. My review of it is,
I don't know why that makes me laugh.
If I was a zoologist or something, I would probably be as outraged as I was about CSI Cyper. Like, animals don't do that. That's not a thing.
Not a thing.
But I'm not a zoologist. So, it's not good. It was not sort of laugh out loud. It's very much what David said last week. Not really laugh out loud bad like CSI Cyber was. There's no isolating of torsos. But there is like, there are lions, like groups of lions chasing people. And there's a, you know, it's Dateline Africa. And, you know, there's so it cuts between these two plots where there's the guy whose name, I can't even remember his name, Johnny Danger, we'll say. He's out in Africa and he's learning about animals and he finds mysterious disappearances. And then he and a French lady are chased by lions and they go over a cliff and then walk the rest of the way and are fine. And there's like no consequences for any of that. But they're being chased by all these many lions, and what's going on with the Lions. And then meanwhile, in the U.S., there's this other plot where a crusading reporter, and since I do have a background in that sort of thing, I can tell you, woo boy, that is some fake journalism that's happening in there. But she gets fired because she's writing on a blog. And literally, there's a scene where her editor says, you can't write about that company. It's owned by the same company that owns us. You know, wow. That would never have, I mean, it would be a much more insidious thing. Is that social commentary about how, no, it doesn't, that's not a thing. See, there it is. Right. That's not a journalism thing at all. It's just this super lame shorthand because it means she's a crusading reporter who's just interested in the truth. She can't be stopped. So she goes and meets with a quirky scientist who has discovered, first off, that the lions in the zoo who escaped, because again, more lions. It should be James Patterson's lions. They're misbehaving. There are no toucans and there are no wolves yet. I think it starts with lions. They're the king of the jungle, you know.
It's going to get good when that happens.
That will be a thing. But there is at the end, and I kid you not, the dramatic moment at the end of the first episode of Zoo. I haven't watched the second episode. The dramatic end of the first, don't make me watch it, Tim. Don't make me watch it. is the scientist in LA shines a flashlight up into a tree and says, this is normally an elementary school, but tomorrow it starts being a summer daycare center. The kids will come here tomorrow. And look, and he shines his flashlight up into the tree, and there's like about 15 house cats in the tree. And the house cats, when they show the house cats, they're not like ears back. They're not hissing. They're just like friendly kitties in a tree. And it's supposed to be threatening, like, why are they here? Perhaps they're going to kill all the children tomorrow by jumping down on them and raining furry death out of this tree. But in the end, it's like, hey, look, kitties in a tree. Da-da-da, zoo. Stay tuned for whatever crap is coming. I don't know. Anyway, that's my review of Zoo. The big moment at the end is they find a bunch of kitties up in a tree. Oh,
I think there's potential there. Actually,
they could like cute people to death or yes. Something.
I you know what? I may take up the third leg of this marathon that David started and passed the baton to you. I may pick it up because I actually think that I may want to watch until there is a toucan wolf connection, and also if there's cute kittens. Or maybe kitten rescue out of a tree. I would watch that.
It could be. Well, I hope that that's what happens in episode two, is that it's firefighters getting the cats out of the tree.
You know, that's a show now.
Problem solved.
There literally is a show
about
that.
Is there a reality show about...
There's a reality show about kitten rescue.
Kitten rescue.
And specifically kitten tree rescue, oh, wow. I believe.
That's good stuff. I hope there are dramatic reenactments of that. We put some cute cats up in a tree and then we take them out. It's a show. So that's my zoo review, my new zoo review, if you will. Not very good. Hard to watch. If they shot it, I'm assuming they shot it in like the valley somewhere and did some CGI to make it look like Africa. But the Africa stuff looks kind of impressive, although there are a few moments where the car is driving on like what appears to be stuff that's already been flattened down so the car can drive on it and park where it needs to. I mean, it's like it looks a little bit fakey, but it looked okay. I kind of like the idea, but of having a show that's partially set in Africa. But I get the feeling like it's just the pilot, and I get the feeling like it's the problem with the portrayal of Africa is it's like every American movie or TV show's view of Africa, which is there's a lot of tall grass and some lions.
Are the Africans white? Because then it would be very much typical of American TV.
Well, the people we spend most of our time with are white.
Yes, clearly.
The French lady and the American guy. There are black Africans there. However, some of them are eaten by lions. And they're never... And the rest of them are like their guides or things like that. Because it really is just sort of a fantasy safari that we're seeing.
Yeah. Okay. So the animals are, but they're communicating with each other.
Well, in the first episode, it's unclear, but I think that's the implication is that lions shouldn't be hunting together and in the way that they are. And they could be, they're like walking into the camp single file to hide their numbers and stuff like that, which is, it's just ludicrous. And then in the background, I should also mention, my other favorite thing about it is that, the main character, Johnny Danger or whatever his name is.
Johnny Rock and Johnny Danger.
Mm-hmm. He's got his videos of his father, who was a famous crackpot. who has these crazy theories that I think is basically telling you what the plot of the show is, which is when there's a thing that's going to threaten devastation of the planet, or there's going to be a mass die-off, or a comet's going to hit, or something like that, the first people who know about it aren't people, they're the animals. The animals sense it before we do. And what amused me about this is that throughout there's this kid who's watching these videos, and it's, they basically got Ken Olin in to just do these loopy videos, and that's all he's, because the character's dead before the show even starts. But I admire that. They're like, hey, Ken Olin, we would like you to just spout some claptrap in front of a bookshelf, and we'll just work that in to the show. It's not a good show. Not
it's
a good
paycheck.
Show. It is, yeah.
It's a paycheck.
Good job, Ken Olin. the check cleared from James Patterson, personally. I do have good news, which is I watched.
You tell.
Okay, so Mr. Robot.
Oh yeah.
Which I feel like I watched ages ago, but I wasn't on last week, and that's why. So big thumbs up to Mr. Robot. I think you're dead on about that. Somebody on Twitter got really mad at me for recommending it, because they said, how can you recommend a show where the main character is steals people's personal information and blackmails them and things like that? That's bad. And I said, do you know that we are in an age of anti-heroes? Well, cause and I didn't say this because it's Twitter, right? But first off, I think Mr. Robot is very knowing about all of the stuff. The main character is not a saint, and in fact, I suspect throughout the show that I can't trust anybody, nor can I trust any people to do the right thing. I feel like the whole world is kind of muddy and interesting because it's so muddy. But I what I said back to him is, we live in this world where everything is like TV antiheroes, like Breaking Bad and The Sopranos. And literally, what the guy said to me was, I guess I consider violations of privacy on the internet a worse crime than murder. It's like, okay, there's nothing more I can do for you.
Yeah, nothing. But this conversation,
whatever
is over.
Pushes your buttons. But I enjoyed it. I thought it was like excellent tactical deployment of Christian Slater. Mm-hmm. I was like, hey, it's Christian Slater. He's pretending to be a homeless guy. He's on the subway. I really like that. And the main guy. Interesting.
Yeah,
good performance and interesting character. Like, there's so many ways that character could have been cliche, and I feel like it was a really great bit of setup of like, you, all of your expectations going in are going to be that he's going to be the certain way, and then the first episode just subverts every one of those expectations just one at a time. It's like knocking them all out. Like he's taking drugs, and his drug dealer comes over, and you're thinking, oh, this poor guy, he can't deal with anybody, and he sleeps with her, and it's right. Like, oh, it's just like, who is this guy? And I was just laughing and amused, and I thought it was a very interesting, weird show. So big thumbs up to Mr. Robot. You win. And big thumbs up to Humans, which I've seen the first two episodes of, and I think is also really great.
Fun, right?
Yeah.
So fun.
Yeah, I finally got to that scene where the teenage son tries to touch the synth's boobs, and she's like, I'll have to report that to your father. He's like, no.
It was so great.
Yeah. Yes. And, I mean, and also there's the whole, honestly, Humans, and this is a big endorsement, actually, Humans reminds me of the first season of Orphan Black. That
yes.
As it goes, I think, wow, this show is painting with a lot more colors than I thought it had in its palette. That it's like,
exactly.
Wow, there's more here, and there's more here. And I love it when a show kind of impresses me like that. That's like, wow, this is way more and deeper than I thought it would be. And that was absolutely the experience I had with Orphan Black, and I'm having it again with Humans. And, I love Orphan Black, so that's a great endorsement.
Yeah, I think it's, both those shows are that way. I think that, I echo and I put in my review exactly what you said. I think that the show has more than you think it has.
Yeah.
Even though it's a well-trod premise, I think that there's some surprises. I credit those British writers for, mapping that out and making it work.
Yeah.
I actually just, every time it ends, I want to see the next one. So it's another one that I kind of want to binge.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. That's good stuff. So that's my report. Two good things that you said were good. And then one thing you made me watch.
I force on you.
That is not so good.
Doesn't it also just sort of go back to reinforce what we've been saying, times of confusion. There's just like, there's so many good shows.
And so much of it is good, right? Which goes back to the something that we've talked about a few times, which is, it's harder to be mediocre now.
Yes.
Right? I feel like you either have to be like really good and simple and glossy, or you have to be really, really good, but you can't be boring.
Boring isn't gonna
I guess that's why we get a show like Zoo, because it's outlandish and either it'll work or it won't. But you know, better be outlandish and have people hate it and say, oh well, we gave it a shot, than just be boring. Because there's no room for boring. There's too much good stuff.
Yeah, and I think that exactly. And I think that what also gets hurt in this new world order that we're in is that if you have a show like Ray Donovan, where if it doesn't continue to be compelling for someone, then what happens is it doesn't get reviewed for the second season. And then it comes, and then the next thing you know, maybe good things happen in the second season, but a lot of critics were not watching it or endorsing it. And then those things, they kind of slide away, because then here comes Humans, and then oh, well, we didn't expect Mr. Robot to be so good, and oh my God, Sex, Drugs, and Rock and Roll is going to be really funny when it comes back. So there's replacements everywhere for time.
Yeah,
not just mediocrity, like you said. I think that if a show just is not, it could be really good, but maybe it's just not compelling, or if it just misses that window of, yeah, I want to stick with this, gone.
Yeah, what did you used to say on the old TV talk machine? It's just another drummer.
Exactly.
Just get another drummer. I mean, this one doesn't please you anymore, you know? There's another drummer.
Get another drummer.
And I also, speaking of shows that I watched, shout out to Dan from the 630, who wrote me an impassioned email that began, I don't normally email podcasts, which I enjoyed. But he basically said, you should watch the third episode of Dark Matter on Sci-Fi, because it was a backdoor pilot, probably. The first two episodes were it's the story from the comic, and they were split across the 2 hours, and that maybe episode three, I think he is an advocate for this show and says that episode three is better and I should give it another shot. And I will. I recorded episode three and I will give it a shot and report back about that. Because pilots aren't always the best way to introduce a show, but I'm skeptical that I'm going to like Dark Matter, but I promised Dan, because he asked so nicely, that I would watch it.
That's always
three.
Good. When people might ask nicely, I tend to do things. Yeah. You're like, okay, I'll try it again. I'll try that.
That's right. Don't be a jerk. Be nice. Just be nice. That's all we ask.
Good people.
I've got some more listener stuff if you are ready for that.
Absolutely.
All right. This is an interesting one from Brady in the 801.
Wow. Okay. Not Tom Brady.
Not Tom
just
Brady.
Just a Brady.
Because this is just regular Brady in the 801. Uh-huh. So that's Salt Lake City area, I believe.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And I'm not a savant about area codes, by the way. I use Google to look up what the area codes are, just to let you know. No quizzes.
Right.
I wouldn't know. So Brady says, I just discovered you guys after Jason mentioned it. Mentioned in a recent Incomparable that you could find my thoughts on CSI Cyber on this podcast. Wow, that is promotion. That is a synergy there.
That's total cross promotion.
But it's more binging. I binged all 41 episodes and was not let down as I basked in all of the not a things that I expected. But this is so interesting question. As an aspiring TV critic myself, I try to indulge in as much quality TV as possible, but I keep running into a problem. Apparently, I'm a bit of a prude. I've always thought of myself as a forward thinker, but I can't get past some of the content and shows I would otherwise love. I realize recently this is because it feels lazy. Just because a TV show is on HBO or Showtime or Netflix or Amazon, it needs explicit sex scenes and language to feel edgy and, to be blunt, bring in the perv crowd. Now, I'm not, is there a perv crowd? Anyway, it gets to the point where
you could be talking about me.
It gets to the point where I'm hesitant to give new shows on these services a shot. Is it just me and I need to get over myself, or do you feel it too? I feel out of touch with today's TV scene. Brady in the 801. What do you think?
I'm okay with nudity. Yeah, I think that's.
Can you see though? I mean, I get what he's saying in this sense. I'm okay with it too. There are moments where you think this is not necessary, right?
Oh, yeah.
Like this
there's
is totally gratuitous.
That. And yeah, there's times when you think, oh, I didn't. You don't need to see that.
Actually, it's funny. I can't take off and put on my nerd hat. My nerd hat basically stays on. But Stargate, the sci-fi, long-running sci-fi show, started on Showtime. And I bought the DVDs of that when they came out. And the first episode's got boobs in it. And I was like, what is happening here? And it was obvious, like, in the pilot, they're like, hey, we're on Showtime. We'll show boobs. And then somebody was like, you're going to send this into syndication later. Don't do that. And they're like, all right, fine. We won't do that. But it was also totally lazy and pointless. Like, there was no reason for it to be there. And that happens from time to time, although sometimes I think it can be really clever and a funny commentary. Like, there was a lot of talk in the early seasons of Game of Thrones about what they started to call sex position, which is, it's really boring dialogue that needs to explain how the world works, but it happens while people are naked and having sex. And it's like, all right, you know.
Yeah, I think that's a good compromise.
A little bit of this, a little bit of that. But so I don't... It's not, I would say it's not for everybody. And I actually just had a moment watching the last episode. I watched the last episode of Community last night. And there are a couple of F-bombs in there, unbleeped F-bombs, that it's like literally, I think in the last episode, they knew they were on the internet, they didn't care, and they just, there are a couple of F-bombs in there. And I had a moment of like, huh, this is a little shocking to me.
Interesting.
But you can, you know, if you don't like that kind of stuff, I would say don't watch those shows. But I think the ones that are truly are artful. It's just a part of, not to use the palette thing again, it's part of the palette that these artists are using, and it's fine to give them those extra colors. There are other times where you roll your eyes. I think it's, you know, I think it's just, if it's good, then it's good. And if it's not so good, then you look at it and say, come on, guys, like, this is all you've got. And, you know, but it doesn't bother me generally. I honestly, the violent stuff bothers me more than the sex and the language do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
when that's brutal.
Yeah, it's yeah. I'm really torn about certain. I think that if the nudity stuff is done because they have nothing else, then I'm just bored with it. Like, I can see nudity anywhere. I can see nudity in a good show.
Yeah,
and then it'll be bonus because it's a great show. It's great dialogue and great acting and action. And then look, this person's lovely and they have no clothes on.
Yeah.
So that to me is a bonus, right? Isolate ass, as we say.
Sure.
So that's great.
CSI Cyber on Showtime.
A little bit of that. But as when it comes to violence, I'm generally not bothered by it until it's done in a way that I don't even want to say that it's disconnected from repercussions, or because that's definitely a thing that I don't like. Although if it's in the right story and it's told in a way where there wouldn't be any repercussions because that's the world it's in, I'm much more bothered by broadcast network shows like the CSIs and all the CBS procedurals that are so dark and so awful, and they show things, especially like gratuitous violence towards women, that just to show us how evil this person is that they're, you know, that they're tracking, and the FBI profilers are tracking. But and because you track so many people, every next person has to be more evil than the last one. I find that kind of violence really, really, like, I think it's unnecessary.
Interesting.
And it's on networks. Whereas if I go and, like, I watch the most violent thing in the whole world probably right now is, or at least that I've seen lately, is the Mad Max movie. It's just insanity. But I got the reason for it. So I was not bothered by it. Huh. It was of its style. It was stylized in that way. But yeah, I'm much more bothered by like CSI and those things.
Well, I mean, you didn't like Daredevil, and I did. But one of the reasons, even though that's a very violent show, and my wife didn't like it as much as me because I think it was a little too violent for her, but it had consequences. Like when the guy got beat up, he got beat up, and you saw him being in pain and beat up later. And that was like, for me, that was okay because then it felt real and there were stakes. And a lot of those clean, violent, you know, shows, your Criminal Minds and Stalkers and things like that, they're on the network, so they're clean and okay to be viewed by people, and yet in some ways that stuff can be the sickest stuff of all because the worldview is so sick. So
yeah, exactly. Totally agree.
So I don't know, Matt, or not Matt, Hobo Brady. Sorry,
well, Hobo Matt too, or Hobo Brady.
Yeah, no, this the Brady and the 801. I got his name wrong. I called him Matt. Matt's our next letter writer. So we move on.
Oh, is he? Okay.
Matt's from the UK, so he's Matt from the +44.
Okay, he's not Hobo Matt, though.
He is not Hobo Matt. Hobo okay. Eric is coming. I've got him, too.
Oh, he's back.
Matt is the guy who we referred to in a previous episode as I think it's maybe his podcast, The Bottle Episode. Matt from the +44. And he said, I'm now almost caught up. It's still the summer of 2015, because we were saying he might not hear that until much later. I've fully enjoyed listening to the podcast, though I'm slightly relieved, as now I can listen to music on my drives to and from work. I'd forgotten what music sounds like. While I wait for you guys in real time, it's been refreshing to hear people whose views of TV mirror my own. Like Jason, my TV obsession was Buffy. Probably still holds a standard to link TV to. I've learned a lot from Tim in terms of importance of professional criticism in helping people choose what to watch. It's not really a question. Just wanted to say how much I've enjoyed the podcast and look forward to keeping up with the running streak. Hopefully I'll have a question for you one day. I just wanted to read this because not only did he say nice things about both of us, but it's good to get find out that the binge has ended for the bottle episode.
I love it. And then he caught up. That was great.
Amazing.
Yes.
And he can go back to listening to music now.
That was, I know, I feel the same way too. Yep. I love podcasts too, but I can't live my life without listening to music constantly. Yep. So I feel his pain on that.
Gotta balance it.
I'm glad he's back.
Thank you, Matt. Hobo Eric is here.
does he have a stick with a little bag on the end of it?
He does. A bindle.
A bindle? So I didn't know what the name was. I said bag. I thought it was basically like a something you put over your head and then you take off and you, yeah. Clearly I didn't know what bindle was.
Yeah, it's the I think that's what it is.
Okay, well I'm gonna
bindle,
go with it.
It's a bindler, bindle stiff. It's a hobo dialect. It's the hobo code. Ask Don Draper. He knows about it.
Hobo dialect.
I don't know.
Okay. look up the hobo dictionary for bindle.
The hobo dictionary is written on walls across the country. It's not published in a book. So Hobo Eric, he brings us a 5-word review of Zoo. Here it is. Okay. Less stupid than expected. Cats.
His mirror is kind of what you said, actually.
Yep. And he also, he basically watched what I watched because he said, Mr. Robot's second episode carries on the edginess. It didn't drop viewers. And Humans over here in the UK Channel 4 is only up to episode 3. His question is, can I assume neither of you watch Big Brother?
Oh, God, no.
The US.
No.
And the answer is yes, you can assume that. Although you don't need, if you assumed, you wouldn't need to ask.
Right.
Okay, we got a few more. David from the 336. That's totally made up, right?
That can't be a thing, right?
It is North Carolina. Okay.
Wow.
David from 336.
God's country.
First time writer, long time listener. Thanks, David. the only two recent shows that felt binge worthy to me were True Detective season 1 and Broadchurch season 1.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I have to say, after starting out on Bloodline pretty slowly, it has completely sucked me in. Since it's from the creators of Damages, I guess I expected it to move at a faster pace, but I'm so glad I hung in there. Ben Mendelsohn is absolutely incredible as the Black Sheep brother. I know Tim feels like Walton Goggins deserves the Emmy. He'll always be shame to me, but Mendelsohn definitely deserves at least a nomination. I wanted to wait until I finished the show to watch an interview with him to hear his native Australian accent, but I broke down and watched one today. He's amazing. I'd love to hear if Tim has watched the entire season and what he thinks.
I have not. Bloodline is in the queue for me.
Yeah, me too.
It's the thing that's going to watch next. I'm gonna use this summer, although I'm rapidly running out of time as TCA approaches, and then it's all over. But I am going to put in the queue to do Bloodline, and I want to watch Black Mirror as well.
Yeah. Good. Mm-hmm. I've got those in my queue too.
Yeah, and the second, was it second or third season of The Fall? I want to get into that. I missed that, whatever season, the current one, I've missed it.
From Scented Meat on Twitter, True Detective is so awful this year, I'm rethinking my Twitter handle. It's so sad. I haven't seen it. I know you didn't like it.
It's terrible.
It's too bad. People who disagree with this can also on the Incomparable Network, the TV podcast, there are actually a couple of guys who are talking about True Detective Season 2 every week. And it's so dangerous to commit to something not knowing whether it's going to be any good or not.
Yes, really
I wish
is.
Them well. I wish mm-hmm. them luck. At least it'll end. It's a limited series.
It could turn around. I don't expect it to, but it could turn around. It's off to a rough start. I've seen the first three, so I'm all caught up.
Yeah, people have not thought very kindly of it yet.
Yeah.
Our friend, My Vogon Poetry, hey, perfect for episode 42, the 716, says, what's the best way to convince people to watch shows like Rectify and Humans? Bribe them with cotton candy?
I'm an alcohol person myself.
Mm.
Bottle of wine wouldn't do it.
Come over to the house with a bottle of wine and say, we're going to watch an episode of Humans.
Yeah.
And drink this bottle of wine.
Yes. Especially if you were, isolate ass. If you were a good looking woman.
Interesting.
Okay. Yeah,
you got to use the CSI cyber technology too.
Yeah, I would do that. Absolutely.
All right.
If somebody, and they came with a bottle of wine. Absolutely. Granted, just knock on the door. I'll open it up and I'll look and then we'll come in.
Okay.
No, it's a good question though. I don't know what can be done. I guess if anybody had that actual correct answer to that, we'd be millionaires because, I think it's I think that our role as critics now for shows that we, you know, we champion is, you know, part of what you're doing is like a public service. Because what I've found is that people are like, okay, look, great, I'm happy about your criticism and whatnot, but really, I just need you to say, just tell me these 10 to watch, right? I don't have this much time.
Right.
You know, what do I get rid of? What do I keep? What's new? So you just keep banging the drum. That's all we can say. I mean, it worked for The Wire. And, you know, I always tell people, don't get hung up on trying to make it a hit. You know, people are like, how can we save this show? I think if we don't have an upcoming question, I will remind everybody that I can't remember her name, but she was on Twitter and talked about Hannibal.
Right.
We'll bring that up in a second, but like, because that's the whole crowd was like, how do we save it? And how do, you know what? I don't think people need to worry about like, how does the show become a hit? How do you make humans or rectify a hit? You don't need to do that. You just actually need to watch the show and have your own life be, you know, be made better in some way by glimpsing this fantastic piece of art. Yes, shows do end too quickly, but you know what? Look, if you can get two or three or four seasons in, those are always going to be on the shelf and nobody can take them away. There's the third season of Rectify starting. I see it where even just this week, Jason, I pounding and saying you should watch it. People are like, you know what? I listened to you on Twitter and I went and I started watching it and I love it and now I'm going to watch it. So really, it's just keeping up the drumbeat. That's all it is.
I would also throw in this digital world we live in now, that if you are a smart owner of a TV show, you give people lots of chances to watch it. So not for Rectify, but for Humans and for Mr. Robot, the first episodes are available on the internet for free. You can just watch it. So you could literally say, you know, do you have Amazon? Do you have Netflix? Do you have iTunes? Just watch it. You know, you don't have to wait for it to come back on. You don't have to buy it or rent it or anything like that. Just, you can just click and watch the show and see what you think. And I think that's really smart. That's a smart thing. In fact, when I watched Humans when I was on vacation, and I brought a little Amazon Fire TV stick with me, and I was like, God, you know, I didn't bring any of those shows, you know, that I watched because they're all saved on the DVR, and I didn't transfer them to my iPad or anything like that. And Humans episode one, I could just watch it on Amazon. It was just there. So we watched it that way. And that's smart, too. So if people are thinking of sampling one of these shows, it may be available to watch on online.
Well, and we won't go into it in this instance in depth, but I would say if I was actually doing a show and I was running a network or a niche cable channel, the first season would always be free. You wouldn't have to go pay for it on iTunes. I wouldn't try to you want people to watch it, obviously. But I think the whole idea is, you know, subsequent seasons, sure. Make them pay for those, put them in some place where they have to have a subscription to get it. That's fine. But like you say, the best way to do it for the first season in this crowded universe is to say, the show is out there and you can totally find it. It's at the ease. You don't have to subscribe. Yeah. You can just find something. You'll get it. That's what I would put. I would put a show out for free on as many platforms as possible.
That killed me about Orphan Black is that the buzz built through that first season and it went off the air and it was not being shown again on Sci-Fi and it was not available on streaming. And so you could like buy the episodes on iTunes, but I think there was no, I'm not even sure who was out on like DVD at that point.
Maybe, but it was
basically like you built up buzz as you went along and then there was just a void. Mm-hmm. And I thought, you know, that's the kind of show that you should get that on streaming fast, even though, yes, you'd probably want to make some more money. But what you really want to do is launch this thing into the stratosphere and get people to watch it. Because once you've got them hooked, things change, but you got to make it available.
Yeah, hey, there's a reason why they say the first one's free.
Yeah, that's right. It's a classic.
and that should be true for the whole season. And then you can milk them for all they got later.
You want to talk about Hannibal before we wrap it up?
Yeah, this nice person who I can't remember who was on Twitter said, asked us what we thought about Hannibal. And even though we weren't seeing it, and here it was going out and not being saved. And the specifics of the question now elude me because that's not surprising, as I say, because TV brain, that's what I have.
Yeah.
I have TV brain. But it was one of those shows. I think I'll work backwards. I think it's lucky that it got all those seasons. And I think that fans of the show should be happy that they got those and they'll be able to find them on the shelves. That's great. A lot of places have passed on it and are not picking it up. And, you know, that's the vagaries of this world and this TV world we live in. But I appreciate, here's what I did. I appreciated that show. I did not enjoy watching it. I thought it was gory and, you know, in some ways I felt it was a little bit repetitive and a little bit redundant, in the process, but it was just too gross for me. I couldn't watch it. I took no joy in watching it. And, you know, I will sit through gore and violence of certain kinds. Sometimes it's hard to get through stuff on like The Walking Dead, but there's something about it that's compelling and I can watch it and get through it. I've never found that with Hannibal. So I'm not of the big, Fannibal crowd.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's interesting to see how that has gone, where a lot of people are talking about, you know, can it be saved? And it's a good question, because we ask that about every show now, because the answer is now yes. It used to be no. It used to be No, the shows don't get saved. Now they do get saved sometimes. But my thought was, Hannibal was such an edge case and like a really niche show for so long that I think even if it doesn't come back, I think fans of that show should be happy that it didn't get canned after a year on NBC, because I consider it kind of a miracle given the ratings, and given the kind of mixed, like, critical support, but like not full-throated, sort of like what you just said, right? It's like, right. I appreciate it, but it's not my thing. The fact that NBC stood behind it for a couple more years is one testament to NBC not doing very well.
It's a testament to their confidence.
In some ways, maybe you think, "Wow, I'm happy we got away with what we got." I don't know.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I. You know what? That's what I feel like with Arrested Development.
It was
treated shabbily, but they made the episodes, and they eventually canceled the series, and obviously it's been redone on Netflix. But I was happy that those are in the can, because now I can go watch those anytime I want to.
Yeah, exactly right. Exactly right.
They were made.
I feel that about Community too, right? It's like it scuttled along for a while, and it's like it's a miracle they made six seasons of that thing. Good God. It should have been canceled after one. I'm so happy that they somehow managed to keep it around.
Yeah, same thing with Parks and Rec. It's like those shows, you just their lives are they're messy, and they don't. And maybe it doesn't come out as fluid as we wanted to, especially in the case of, Community. But it's done, and you get to see it. That's all that matters these days.
Cool. All right, I think we're done for this week. Lots for us to talk about, but I'm sure there'll be a lot more next week too.
Yeah, I hope it slows down.
Yeah,
it would be great to just do Bill Walton references all day. That's all I want to do.
Sure. Slow down enough for us to watch Bloodline.
Yes,
stuff
exactly.
Like that.
It would be great if it slowed down enough for us to watch stuff that's already been on and everybody else has seen it, and you and I are new to it. And
man.
Like, whoa, guys.
I'd like to talk about that new season of Orphan Black that I'm still only two episodes into. Actually, with the kids gone, that is one thing that we're able to do, is watch a little more TV.
Yes.
So that's something. Whew.
Keeping me in business, baby.
Yep. All right. Thanks to everybody out there for listening. One last reminder of how you can reach us, so you can have your questions read, if we can remember your names.
Or forgotten.
Tweet us at TVTM, or me at Jay Snell, and Tim at Bastard Machine. You can post on our Facebook page, facebook.com/TV Talk Machine. And also TVTalkMachine.com is the web address, and podcast@TVTalkMachine.com will get you email straight to me. And Tim.
We're all over the place.
We are everywhere. You can find us. There's no reason not to. No excuse not to. We're worldwide and accessible by all means. All right, Tim, it's been a pleasure as always.
All right, welcome back, Jason. We'll see you next week.
See you next week.